wait for Aaron Rodgers. Mike Tomlin, too, breaking down the first practice. We do have the Steelers media horde and fans who flock to St. Vincent to watch this first practice, critiquing and analyzing what happened. The consensus seems to be that this was a rough practice from Aaron Rodgers, that he did not get off to a great start. Now, I'll be curious to hear what Rodgers says when he meets reporters. His first play in an 11-on-11 drill was in, they were inside their own 20-yard line. He threw an out pattern. I can't really tell who the receiver is. I think it was actually Metcalf from the looks of things.
But Patrick Queen was a lot Patrick more wide Queen open on the play.
Intercepted it. And it's my personal belief that Rodgers probably did that on purpose.
To make the defense feel good about themselves.
Or he like Ben used to do, would try things to see what he could get away with in practice.
What was Ben's thing? He wanted to test a receiver's catch radius so he would throw bad balls in camp.
That's called 4D chess right there.
Mm.
And I wonder if Rodgers subscribes to the same philosophy on practice. I think it's entirely possible. Nick Faribault said, first day of camp, so grain of salt. Rodgers and DK Metcalf haven't been on the same page. Something to watch that should improve as their chemistry evolves throughout camp. Brooke Pryor put a finer point on it and said that Rodgers targeted Metcalf three times and was 1 for 3 in those situations. Alan Saunders from Steelers Now said that very clearly one of those incompletions was because those two were not on the same page with each other. So they should be the most advanced in terms of chemistry because they've spent the most time together. Rodgers and Metcalf worked out before Rodgers signed here. Then Metcalf was one of the guys who went to Malibu and had some workouts with Rodgers before training camp started, in between mini camp and training camp. So if people were going there and expecting to see this relationship hit the ground running and flourish from day one, that was not the case. This is not me sounding alarm bells at all. This is me merely pointing out what happened and just saying that, you know, it's not a microwave situation where they showed up and it was ready to eat right from the very beginning,
Chris. This is why they lift all them weights and practice all them plays. I'm not gonna get too overly analytical about it.
Would you get more analytical over this aspect? First set of 11-on-11 plays. What they did offensively in the first team drill workout from Christopher Carter of the PG. First play was a handoff to Jaylen Warren for 4 yards. Second play. Wait, do I have? No, that's actually not it. Okay, hold on. Let me start over again. My bad. Okay, first play. Yes, handoff to Jaylen Warren up the middle for 5 yards. Second play, play action. Rodgers dumped it off to Darnell Washington in the flat.
Okay.
Next play was a Jaylen Warren run. Play after that was a Caleb Johnson run. So first series, 3 runs in a pass to a tight end. That is the Arthur Smith offense in a nutshell right there.
Yes, it is.
He is in his bag here.
I mean,
Run it three times and give it to a tight end.
That's a successful play on first down. Get him into 2nd and 5.
I think that Arthur Smith,
he needs to invert. I do want to see out of him this year if he's got now the quarterback to execute it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. A guy who's clearly better than either of the guys last year. Like more play action on first down. I want to see a little bit more invert the. Remember how they used to always say pitch backwards with a guy like Liriano? Throw your slider to get over, then throw your fastball to get guys out. Weirdly enough, invert it on defenses. I don't want to see predictability. They're going to run most, you know, the same stuff. They're going to run Arthur Smith stuff. They're going to mix they're going to mix in a lot of what Aaron Rodgers wants to run, ultimately. But I still am different from you in that I think he's going to at least publicly play ball a little bit more and be okay with doing what Arthur.
So is that you having confidence in Arthur Smith?
It's me having confidence that Rodgers actually does want to be here and kind of go out good vibes. And that also,
but that's not
Rodgers. I think the one thing I've tried to say consistently about Rodgers, like I think he's kind of goofy on a bunch of different non-football subjects, and I don't care to hear him bloviate about that stuff.
Yep.
But I do think Rodgers the teammate and Rodgers the coachable player, aside from the Jets, which was a mess. But I think he was much more coachable, like by Matt LaFleur, than I gave him credit for. And I think he'll be coachable here. And we hear all his teammates say, unbelievable dude. Love having him around.
Except when he was throwing guys like Mike Williams under the bus after losses and everything.
I would say Garrett there was Wilson. Two guys he seemed to throw under the bus there. Garrett Wilson, which is a mark against, I think, Rodgers, but probably also to some extent, I guess, against Wilson. The Mike Williams thing almost seemed like elder abuse. Except it was the elder doing, you know what I mean. I mean, Mike Williams, he must have just felt like had nothing left.
And that's why he retired, like, in the last
He might not have been. I mean, Mike Williams' final act, basically, was winning a game with a touchdown.
I don't know. I subscribe to the idea that you've got to break some eggs to make an omelet. If one of the issues, I think, with Russell Wilson and Arthur Smith last year is that they were passive-aggressive about things. I actually want some, especially headbutting right now.
What works, what doesn't work?
Yes.
There was no Jonnu Smith today, which is relevant to why Darnell Washington might have caught that dump-off on a play action. Not apparently a long-term issue. I think somebody cited heat-related, maybe.
What? The guy's from
Jonnu
Miami.
Smith was coming from Miami and went
He's
to FIU.
From there.
Yes, I know. I mean, technically born in Philadelphia.
He's not an Eskimo. I'm surprised to hear that he, of all people, was dealing with some kind of heat-related problem. That is a quick way to get on Mike Tomlin's bad side, by the way, because the whole reason why they're practicing
the heat
is because, yes, he wants to separate Cordero the chaff Patterson. From the wheat with the hot weather.
Cordero Patterson. Rock Hill, South Carolina. It ain't chilly there.
Why is Cordero Patterson there? Can someone ask Mike Tomlin that question? Just why is he still here?
Hanging out?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't see any. I hope he's not a part of their offense this year. He looked old last year, and he wasn't even good at doing the thing that made him famous last year, which is return kicks for big returns. Remember the rule change, and they immediately signed him? And I gave them credit for that. Like
it seemed like a smart like 4D chess kind of move.
Kick returns are back. Go get the guy that other than Devin Hester is like the best to do it in the last 20 years.
And then he was running like a tight end in the open field.
Right,
get the ball. Nickname Flash. What was he by the end of last year? Molasses. I mean, he was very slow.
Mason Rudolph, on the other hand, went out there and was very sharp right from the beginning. Was 4 for 4.
Now, wait a minute.
So are we going
to
hear...
Is Cabali's loyalty to McAfee, and McAfee puts Rodgers on every week, going to supersede that? I guess
great
we'll
question.
We're going to find out where Cabali's bread's buttered.
That's a great point.
Inside you, there are two wolves. One who wants to say Mason's the best quarterback in camp. The other who works for Pat McAfee.
I think he's going to side with the guy that
signs the
checks.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're going to get... I think Cabali's going to be a shrinking violet.
Now, how about this, as far as the quarterbacks go? Quarterback rotation... Today, Rodgers with the first team. Rudolph was the next guy to cycle in. And then the third guy was Thompson. Howard got like the scrub time. He got like the absolute down the line time with all the guys that Pompeiani's going to be gushing about in the fourth quarter of games. I mean, I understand that you don't want to give somebody just something before they earn it per se, but Howard's your guy, and Thompson is just a body. So why wouldn't you flip that? And I don't think I'm just like splitting hairs here. Like
you drafted the guy in the sixth round.
I'd like to see him get more meaningful opportunities. Yeah. Who cares about Skylar Thompson? Get Howard out there against better competition.
I think that is a hallmark of Mike. Maybe I don't want to be narrow and say it's only Mike. I think coaches love to see. In certain settings, like if a guy got picked that far back and it's not a Shador Sanders situation where he's in a four-man derby or whatever the hell it is for the quarterback spot,
yep,
they want to see him show a little bit first.
The Steelers opening day of training camp MVP, the guy that went out there and put on the biggest and best show for the fans and media who were at St. Vincent College today. Did you see who it was?
DK.
No.
Dejan
Kovacevic was the...
Metcalf.
No.
You're saying this is the MVP?
Yep.
Offense or defense?
Offense.
Jaylen Warren?
No, but you're getting warmer.
Caleb Johnson?
Yep.
I feel like it's got to be the easiest for the running backs to pop on a day like this, right? They just get the ball. Like, you get the ball. Maybe a quarterback could pop, too, but...
But my thing was, with him, he's a physical back, and I would think you need to put him in pads to really get a full...
Appreciation
for what he is, exactly. His 40 time was brutal. We know that. And yet, the people at practice, Nick Faribault, I'm hesitant to call anything a big run given there's no pads, but one thing I'll say about Caleb Johnson, absolutely flies when he gets into open grass. Serious build-up speed.
I don't know. I feel like it's easy to say somebody has serious build-up speed when they're running against no one, and something else altogether to when guys in the NFL are chasing them in a game that counts. You think a guy like...
He said, I'm hesitant, but I still have to observe this because it's so breathtaking.
Opinion, what he's able to do here. All right, yes. I need an opinion from you. When Faribault writes, I'm hesitant to say this because it's football in shorts.
Is he really hesitant to say it? Is that what you're asking?
There's two things. Is he actually saying that because deep down... he is really excited about it because there's still a little bit of fan in him and he thinks the guy could be really good?
Or
is he like genuinely hesitant to say it because he's so cynical, but he's got to churn out tweets about stuff and he knows deep down that they don't mean that much?
No, I think if he didn't think it was worth pointing out, he would have just kept it to himself. Kozora, non-padded and no-tackling practice, but you can definitely feel rookie Caleb Johnson's burst through the hole on zone runs. Oh. It's impressive. You're sitting there in the stands and you feel it. There's like a breeze that goes by. It's a refreshing breeze on an otherwise scorching hot days. You feel the like backdraft of Caleb Johnson.
Backdraft.
You feel it as he runs by, as he dashes by.
We're all big fans of Kozora on this show. I think he's a certified ball knower. That is a little much. That's like the autumn wind is a Raider. But for like training camp stuff that
it's
means
like Grantland Rice.
Really, it is.
Waxing poetic.
Like, what are we doing here? Come on.
Warren did get the first team reps, but I think that is going to be a very intriguing situation with those two guys.
So, Fake John and Robinson chimed in on the Thompson and Howard thing, and I'll just connect this to Warren and Caleb Johnson very quickly. He said, Thompson getting those reps over Howard is Tomlin just doing his rookies aren't handed anything shtick. That's probably true in that case. I tend to agree with it. I do think... with Caleb Johnson, that position, and with what you said earlier, Piggy gets put on the ground a little too much for Tomlin's liking with Warren. One guy might be a rookie, but I think Mike would be more than happy to see Caleb Johnson
force his hand. But I think it actually goes beyond that, because I think with Warren, he knows he has a good player. He knows he can trust him in pass protection. He knows on third down he can catch the ball out of the backfield. He knows he's a tough runner. Like, there is plenty to like about Warren.
Sure.
But I don't think Mike looks at Warren
as
an alpha running back. If he did, he would have given Warren those opportunities over a pedestrian Najee last year, and he didn't.
Do you think that there's part of it, the build for him? He's just a smallish guy, and even though he runs like a bowling ball, Tomlin's got a certain archetype in his head. Najee was like, what, 6'1", every bit of 6'1", 235, let's say.
So let's see. Let me look.
Lev Bell came into the league at 6'1 or 6'2, 240, got slimmed down to like 220, but Bell was a strong, like powerful guy and a big guy.
So Warren is listed at 5'8", 215.
That sounds right.
Let me see what, I got a guy in my head here I want to compare him
MJD?
To. No, that's not a bad one, though. I said Willie Parker. Willie Parker, 5'10", 212.
I thought of Willie Parker weirdly enough, I think of Parker or thought of Parker as, obviously, his name was Fast Willie Parker, as a pure speed guy. I think of Warren as more of a head-down bruiser type.
I know, but I was just saying, like, both undrafted guys, so there was something about them, as far as measurables go, that made teams think that they weren't, you know, good enough to be a number one running back in the NFL, or in their case, not even good enough to be drafted.
When Willie Parker played at North Carolina, I mean, the only thing I can come up with here for you is I'm looking over at his college football reference page. It doesn't look, here's the problem for him. Who would he have been graduating with in 05 from there that would have been a good running back at Carolina? He only got like more than 20 carries in a game there once in his entire career.
Yeah, I knew that about him.
He was a very underutilized guy. He had 21 for 158.
He was a diamond in the rough.
So I'm trying to think of a comp from, like, honestly, I'm trying to think of a comp from a college team, a guy to just, like, slip totally through the cracks, and Warren just is, like, the same thing. So there's just not a body of work there.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the thing.
I can't think of an NFL guy who was there during those years that would have blocked him. I can't.
So, can you name the coach on that North Carolina team in 2001, all those other years? If you can name this, I will be very impressed.
So, Mack Brown would have already left there.
Yes.
2000 North Carolina coach.
This is a name that, like, when I saw it, it popped back into my head. I was like, oh, that guy. He was there in 2000 only. They had a different guy in 01, in 02, in 03. 04. I'm gonna tell you.
Who?
Carl Torbush.
Yeah, I wasn't gonna get that.
I'm looking at Parker's career there. And I looked at their roster. There's nobody really. There's like dudes named Ronnie McGill. Do you remember any of these names? Just kind of like random guys on that roster, and just Parker was every bit one of them, just a random guy. You know what? You're right. Diamond in the rough, and I think it's more of a, you said like a thing that prevented him from being drafted. I think in his case, it's more of he had one weird attribute that made teams look twice at him in free agency. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or otherwise, he doesn't get a sniff at all, but he can just have breakaway speed and it clicked.
Biggest football topic of the day with the Steelers wrapping up their first practice in Latrobe. You'll hear Aaron Rodgers and Mike Tomlin in just a little bit here with us. Biggest football topic in the Donnie Football Debrief, 15 minutes away. Donnie will do his show tonight from Dino's in Latrobe with a heavy heart because of the passing of Hulk Hogan. Steve Palazzolo, 33rd team, good enough to be consulted by NFL teams, good enough to break down NFL rosters for a living, good enough to maybe someday get interviews for GM jobs. But at his core, he is also a massive wrestling fan. So
I think he was more of a WCW guy by his own admission.
Though, what?
During the Attitude Era.
That's like saying you're more RC Cola than Coke.
Well, until like 97, it was like saying you're more Coke than RC Cola. And then it all flipped because of my number one pick on this list.
So while remaining respectful, Steve, you were not the biggest Hulk Hogan guy?
No, I like Hulk Hogan and respect what he did. I just liked WCW a little bit more. For me, it was like NFL and college football, 1 and 1A for me. Mm.
How about so, when Hogan went to WCW and became a bad guy? Did you like that?
I mean, that started, you know, WCW's run. It started all of it. I mean, I respected what Hogan did, but I think by that point I was into, like, you know, good matches and the technical side of everything.
Then you got to go watch him when he would wrestle in Japan, Steve. It was totally different. He had, like, a clothesline that was his finishing move. He was doing drop toe holds.
You guys nerd out.
He was getting physical, wrestling Stan Hansen over there and everything. Yeah, I know. I got it. Wow.
Pony's eyes are glazing over faster than when Mike Tomlin starts a press conference right now, Steve.
Fair point. Steve, how about the Steelers as they begin their 2025 journey today? When you look at their team, give me what you think on paper is their biggest strength and what you think is their biggest weakness.
Biggest strength is their pass rush, front seven, however, like wherever you want to stop that. Defensive line, if you include T.J. Watt, Alex Highsmith as linemen, even though they're called linebackers in that system. It's their pass rush, though. It's their physicality up front, their depth up front. And then I think you could say the entire defense. I mean, I think Jalen Ramsey can still play. And I really think that improved their chances defensively. Again, nothing against Minkah Fitzpatrick. I just think Jalen Ramsey upgraded them defensively. So I think the entire defense has a chance to be special. And predicting defense is one of the hardest things to do in football analysis. It's rarely the same team multiple years in a row. It's not like offenses, but I think they have the pieces to be the best defense in the league. So I think that's absolutely their strength.
Steve, it's only the first day of camp. I'm not asking this in an overreacting way, but we've seen already today the reporters covering practice have said that Jalen Ramsey has lined up as a safety, that he broke off with the safeties when the defensive backs split up into corners and safeties, that he went with the safeties. What would your reaction be if that ends up being mainly what the Steelers' plan is, that he plays a lot of safety, that he's actually not playing cornerback?
So that's an interesting one because then you ask, look, I think Ramsey can do it all, but then you ask, all right, is he actually a better safety than Minkah Fitzpatrick? And then it's like, all right, did we just get a free Jonnu Smith? Is it a wash at safety? And then we got a free Jonnu, and is that worth it? But, I mean, Ramsey played safety in college many years ago, but he played safety, nickel, and then outside corner. 3 straight years at Florida State, excelled at all of them. He is that good. And I think safety for him probably still means he's getting into the box. He's still, probably playing a little bit of slot in and around the line of scrimmage. Maybe that late Charles Woodson career move where Woodson was like an extra linebacker in there and won defensive player of the year by being versatile. If that's what Ramsey does, yeah, I think that's fine. But I'm also curious to know if they would use him week to week in more matchup type of situations between him, Darius Slay, Joey Porter Jr., if that makes sense. I like Slay better in man coverage anyway, historically. So that could be an interesting combination. I think either way, I think there's just some versatility on that side or in the secondary now with Ramsey.
Steve, how about the team's biggest weakness?
I think the biggest question, is wide receiver two for me, and the biggest weakness could easily be Broderick Jones if he doesn't improve quickly. So Broderick Jones at tackle, even if he is moving to the left side and, you know, hopefully a little bit better, he just looked just out of sorts the last couple, I think the last 2 years. I know we debated it 2 years ago when the run game seemed to kick up a notch when he went in there. I don't know that it was necessarily because of Broderick Jones, but I think that's the biggest. The biggest question is wide receiver opposite DK Metcalf, let's say receiver generally, and I would say offensive line, you know, tackle perhaps, where it's just Broderick Jones and then Fautanu, you know, will they, it's just an uncertain position group right now, I think, for the Steelers.
Steve, when you look at Caleb Johnson, how he profiles versus Jaylen Warren, who do you think has more tools in the tool belt to be more of the every down back, the guy who gets the greater share of the carries and touches between the two of them?
I think the edge usually goes to the bigger guy, but and that's Caleb Johnson. And I think that's where he's probably at his best. I think we've seen historically guys like Jaylen Warren who are really good change of pace backs and maybe are really efficient on smaller samples, and everybody says, just give them the ball more. It doesn't always work that way as far as maintaining that efficiency. I still like Warren as a change of pace back, get him catches out of the backfield, get him into space, create some big plays. But I really love the way Caleb Johnson runs the football, finishes runs. He didn't run that well at the combine, but I didn't think he really looked slow necessarily. I thought he was tough to tackle against Ohio State, had a big run or two there that really stood out. I love the way he runs in the zone game as far as getting downhill. And I really like what I saw from Caleb Johnson on film, and I do think he eventually takes over that number one spot.
Steve, ESPN had the Steelers as the 19th overall roster in the NFL. Does that seem too high, too low, or just right to you?
Off the top of my head, it sounds low. I mean, I never know in those situations how much they're weighing the quarterback. And again, I hate how much the quarterback really impacts things. It is, you can't win with just a quarterback, but it changes things, right? Like you drop an elite quarterback on the roster and it changes a lot. We've seen that with multiple teams. So that depends a lot on how they view Aaron Rodgers at this point in his career, I assume. But I think the rest of the roster, like I said, I think they have top five defense potential. The offensive line is young, but there's something to work with there. And there's questions, I'd say, as far as pass catchers go, but it's not like they have no talent there. It's more about just rounding out the depth. So I think they're a top half of the league roster and probably a lot closer to the top 10 than they are in the 20s.
Steve, this is one of those questions that I feel like not dumb for asking, but I just know I'm getting repetitive with Pony and he's probably rolling his eyes internally. Speaking of pass catchers, what on earth does Amari Cooper have, like a secret broken femur that nobody's been told about that's keeping him from being picked up by other teams? 30 other teams besides the Steelers don't seem to have any interest in a guy that I didn't think fell off a cliff at the end of last year with Buffalo. So why is he still sitting out there with no seeming interest in his services as of now?
It is always wild to me how quickly receivers can just look old, whether it's, you know, Julio Jones a couple of years ago, Andre Johnson, Randy Moss. I mean, Randy Moss, when he finished his career, I mean, it was like 1 week. It was all of a sudden he didn't have it. So That's the challenge, I think, with receivers. And I really thought Amari Cooper was going to be a great pickup for the Bills. And it's not like they needed to feed him 10 to 15 targets a game to make it worth it, but he just didn't fill the need that I think they wanted him to. DeAndre Hopkins with the Chiefs, the same thing. I think that's just what it is. Teams don't like to go that route and trust the aging receiver because things do go south quickly. And then there's this idea that, you know, maybe he doesn't want to go through training camp and maybe you can pick him up later and you really want to get reps, you know, for the younger guys. But I still think Cooper has a little bit left, but I'm still probably not going to be that excited when and if he lands somewhere. I don't know that he's going to make a massive impact this year.
All right, here's a question on what you said about how much you weight the quarterback. Who would you rather be right now, Steve? The Steelers or the Bengals, and why?
I'd rather be the Bengals because of the QB.
Yeah.
Because there's Burrow, Higgins, and Chase. You know, they give you that ability, and they give you that ability to – to win through the air, through the pass game. And as I said earlier, like with defense, do the Steelers have a better on paper defense? Absolutely.
Yes.
But with the Bengals, they just need to get to like creep back toward average defensively. And sometimes you can do that with Al Golden, defensive coordinator change, but Burrow, Chase, and Higgins can carry a team. And so I'd say the Bengals are in better shape for both the short and long term. Because
I'm sure Kyle Shanahan would disagree with this notion, but it just feels like your answer there could be boiled down to, Steve, too. It's easier to scheme up a defense with no-name players or younger players and have them be greater than the sum of the parts than it is to just scheme up offense for a quarterback who just isn't one of those dudes in the NFL, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think a great play caller is probably as rare as the great quarterback, and Kyle Shanahan's one of them, and Andy Reid's one of them, and maybe
Ben
Kevin
Johnson
O'Connell
was one with Goff because he made Goff look great again in that setting.
And now you get this testing, right? Like, will he do it with Caleb Williams? And as soon as he does, you say, well, Ben Johnson's that guy. He's a QB creator. But there's not a lot of those coordinators. And if Kyle Shanahan has worked wonders with a slew of quarterbacks over the last 15 years, but that is rare. And I think those guys are as rare as Brady, Mahomes, Peyton, and whoever you want to mention. Big Ben for my crowd. That's the challenge, right?
Know your audience here.
I know. You got to go big. That's why I've defended Mike Tomlin a little bit, right? It's like you lose Big Ben, you don't have a quarterback. Did Mike Tomlin change a lot? You know, Big Ben and the elite quarterback.
All right, now you're losing the audience because they're mostly fed up with Tomlin. I have a question that might be a little inside baseball, but I think that our listeners care about this. And it's kind of a macro thing that applies to the Steelers, Steve. Why is it there are so many teams that have ample cap space when it's July 24th? The Steelers have about $20 million. I see teams like the Patriots with $60 million. I see teams like the Lions that are trying to win now with almost $50 million in cap space. How do you explain that?
So much of it is when you have to sign players in the future, and most teams are looking at the cash flow. So, you know, whatever the cap was last year, like 220 or whatever, or 210, whatever it was, the Eagles were spending like 280 in cash. So it's more about the cap to cash ratio that teams are trying to look at. And so they might have, you know, higher cash flow than the cap is showing. The Colts have been that team for years. They have $50 million every single year. It's like, all right, when are they going to use it? You know, when are they going to use it? But the other issue with the Steelers, or the good part for the Steelers, is they don't have the $50 million quarterback. Now, I know the Lions do, but the Lions have so many good young players that they need to sign very soon here. So they're going to eat into that. But if you don't have a high-priced quarterback, the Steelers basically have a rookie contract type of quarterback situation, it's almost impossible to use all the money. It's difficult to use all the money unless you're the Saints and you've been racking up the credit card for 20 years. So that, I think that's all a big part of it.
All right, Steve, we'll let you get back to watching maybe some old wrestling highlights of Hulk Hogan. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
There you go. Steve Palazzolo, 33rd team. Yeah, I mean, in future years, the Steelers have for next year $31 million in cap space, and the year after that, $137 million in cap space.
I just think nothing says state of the NFL more to me than when you asked him a very good question. Who would you rather be, Bengals or Steelers? I think he gave you the answer, I don't know, like outside of Pittsburgh, how many people would actually, out of 100 people, would answer Steelers?
Well, intern Dom agrees with that.
No, but outside of Pittsburgh,
right, Dom, you'd rather be the Bengals than the Steelers. You still have high praise for the Bengals.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think even if you included Pittsburgh, if I just said, who would you rather be right now, like taking it all into account, Cincy or Pittsburgh, and I put that to a poll question?
Do it. I dare you.
Okay. Fine.
Speaking of the poll point of the show, because it's the Donnie Football Debrief brought to you by Saloni's Italian Bread Company, over 100 years of baking experience. And Donnie is currently on his way to Dino's in Latrobe to host our training camp coverage show from 6 to 10:35, which means we're stuck with intern Dom. And much to the chagrin of Dom, people just loathed his Donnie Football Debrief yesterday, where he was trying to...
Checked in, Pony, to see how Saloni's feels about Dom performing this segment.
Well, he made it about himself. He just ended up hijacking the segment and saying, Chris, how should I get tickets for Penn State, Oregon?
No, I had a very good topic idea that you guys didn't do, so I decided to take it off to another direction.
You must have an alternate definition of didn't do, because you presented it and Chris and I talked about it for the better part of 5 minutes.
But you didn't talk, you weren't interested. It was very apparent to the audience.
You're questioning our gusto right now?
I'm questioning the gusto yesterday. I think you were sabotaging the debrief.
Who are you, our brand manager, or you our boss, suddenly Craig deciding whether or not we've got enough je ne sais quoi and joie de vivre?
He made no mention of a lack of gusto. None whatsoever.
In fact, he said the show is full of gusto, might have too much gusto.
He loved the Austin Bechtold impression, especially the finishing comment from Chris when he mocked Bechtold's love affair with Wiffleball.
Listen, I have to bring the juice. You have a morning show producer that doesn't know what he's doing for 4.5 hours. You have a midday producer who's doing, you know, reading fake tweets on the air.
We know what he's not doing, that midday producer.
Well, that's true.
And you accused Donnie of making the worst list ever created earlier in the show.
Yeah, he might be disqualified as a wrestling fan, to be honest, after that garbage that he put out on the air.
Okay.
So anyway. I really, you know, I try to do my best here because I got to pick up the slack that everybody else refuses to.
All right, so how are you going to do that right now?
So, by the way, Pony, I just saw your text now, so apologies.
Okay.
But there's a big story in the NFL over the past couple days that ESPN is close to acquiring NFL Media, which includes NFL Network and NFL Red Zone. So the owners will be voting on it probably in the next month. Apparently, they're all in and will approve of this. It will be an enormous price that ESPN will pay for all this NFL content. And like I said, part of the deal means Red Zone will be a part of ESPN, NFL Network will be a part of ESPN, a couple regular season games. And the big concern now is that ESPN is going to do what they normally do and take over all this NFL property and make it, you know, less than, and probably put Stephen A. Smith in charge of Red Zone.
I mean, I think they do a good job with their... that last line's pretty good, Dom. Quite frankly, we're going out to the 405 one. No, I mean, here's the thing. ESPN's got a direct-to-consumer streaming service, like just a product that is going to be like $30 a month, reportedly, Pony.
Okay.
And like they're going to launch this thing, and so they've got to have as much in there to justify charging that much money as they can. And so this all seems like it would fall under that umbrella. I will say, Dom's worried that they ruin everything they touch with debate show antics. I do think ESPN understands how important their relationship with the NFL itself is. And so I don't have concerns that they would screw up everything. The only way that they could is by giving Mike Greenberg an expanded role in any of it.
They probably will. And he'll just...
Did you see him this morning? It was a little more tongue-in-cheek than the quotes made it seem like that people were typing out. He acted like Justin Fields going down with what proved to be a dislocated toe that might keep him out a week or two. He acted like he was Walter Cronkite telling a nation that JFK had been shot.
Yeah, the Jets thing he does is just nauseating for me. And also the Mike Tomlin worship, which I know Dom loves. Yeah, I don't want more ESPN in my life. I want either the amount I'm getting now or less. So the monopolization of sports media all being consolidated into the hands of Bristol and ESPN,
that's not
is
good
something I'm not into.
That's objectively now, bad for other business. We need a strong Nick Wright in Fox Sports.
I understand that, you know, the NFL, it's owned by the NFL. So Aditi brought this up, how sometimes, you know, things would have to go through the NFL filter before they reported it or talked about it. But I honestly think they do. I mean, it's not always the most entertaining or the most interesting. I think they do a pretty good job with their programming. Like, the thing I'm going to wonder about that I'm a nerd about is, like, the old games and stuff that they air. Is that going to go out the window? Is it just going to be ESPN's NFL programming on it nonstop? I'm not into that. I like the old NFL film.
The NFL YouTube channel, if you miss a game, or like obviously they have a, you know, you can pay for the service where you just get NFL Plus and you can go back and watch the coach's film, excuse me. But like the YouTube channel for the NFL, for example, Pony, you can go and get like those condensed extended highlights that are like a 9-minute highlight package if you want to see what happened in a game, but you don't have time to watch the whole thing.
Yep.
Even on condensed film. And I wonder about that stuff on YouTube. I wonder about, you said NFL Films Archives. I wonder about that. How about if you're one of the insiders at the NFL Network, like a Pelissero or a Rap Sheet? Like, what does your job look
right.
like?
Right, ESPN already has a bunch.
Do you get brought in under the ESPN umbrella and they just say, we are committing so much money to the rights for this and every ancillary, you know, thing or element NFL that we're going to need all of you? Because, like, those guys compete with
I would
Schefter.
Be nervous if I'm both an ESPN and an NFL insider.
I'd be going and talking to Fox. I'd be talking to The Athletic if I were some of those people.
Another big part of this is they're really emphasizing how ESPN is going to try and bring this to their new streaming platform.
That's what I meant.
Again, you must have not have been paying attention to Mulsey when he brought that up, Don.
No, that was to reinforce my next point, which is okay. I genuinely believe in the next 10 years we are going to see regular season NFL games on Netflix and Amazon. I think that's where this
they
is all
already
headed.
Are. There's a Thursday night package on Amazon, and this Christmas games run Netflix.
I'm saying Sunday afternoon regular season games on a weekly basis instead of it being on Fox or CBS.
I think it's possible.
So you do think that one of those streaming platforms could get the actual weekday Sunday rights?
Yes, I think he's right.
Yes.
I'm actually going to, if this were Around the Horn, which no longer airs, I would actually award Dom a point for that take.
You do the little clicker thing?
Artie Burns placed on the injured reserve. By the Dolphins. So
his torn ACL, right?
His season is over before it even starts.
He has had one of the most unbelievable, he's hanging in there and just continuing to get NFL checks careers.
Where does Artie Burns rank among Steelers draft pick busts in the Mike Tomlin era?
Jarvis Jones is probably number one, right?
You're going to put him ahead of Kenny, huh?
Pickett's probably two.
Wait a minute. I disagree with both of those. I'm putting Devin Bush one. He was the 10th pick.
At least
he had a quasi good year.
At least in Bush's case, the reason I would probably put him third.
They traded up for him.
I understand that, but the reason I would give him a slight pass, even though ACL injuries are supposed to be recoverable in most cases, he looked like a good player in the making. Tore his knee up and was clearly never
the
same.
Jarvis Jones had stenosis. I mean, should we have?
But that
taken
was a pre-existing
condition.
That wasn't like he became afflicted with it. He had it. It was a medical thing. It was a red flag. Kenny had a red flag. Tiny little hands.
I would go Bush one, Jones two, and then I would say based on how quickly they got rid of him, Kenny three. I'm
going
to go Burns 3 and Kenny 4.
I'm going.
Because Kenny won them games. Say what you will. I know you will about how.
Well, just quarterback is such an outsized important
position.
He made
big plays. Burns never made big plays.
I'm going Jones 1, Pickett 2, Burns 3.
Man, you're giving Devin Bush way too much four, of the doubt.
And then we never can make a four-man list. It's got to be five. Evander Ziggy Hood, number 5.
I'm fine with that. Everything else about your list I don't like.
Well, there's a shock. This was a good debrief by Dom. He redeemed himself.
Hey, thank you.
I hate saying that. I do hate praising him for anything. I guess Crowley said on the air he wished intern Dom would take over for Callis.
Well, I actually have something else to add to the debrief here quickly.
Yes.
Breaking. President Donald Trump has signed a college sports executive order that prohibits a third-party pay-for-play payment to college athletes.
Where's this from?
This is from On Three Sports, which is the best of college sports, titled President Donald J. Trump Saves College Sports. Yeah.
Did you also see that North Carolina is trying to get to the SEC?
Did you also see that they sold out all of their tickets for this year?
Yeah, I hate Bill Belichick. I'll just throw that out there.
So he also wants to, in this, it says he's directed the labor secretary and the NLRB to clarify that athletes are amateurs and not employees. They're employees. We all know that. You have to be.
But then they can unionize.
Well, yeah, and that's probably a massive or the reason why he would be doing this. But just to be very clear, his order legally, yes, makes sure that they clarifies that they're not this. They are that, though.
So what does that mean, they'll end up getting paid?
The executive order prohibits third-party pay-for-play agreements, but, quote, does not apply to legitimate fair market value compensation that a third party provides to an athlete, such as for a brand endorsement, end quote. So that would still be NIL. That's a loophole wide enough to drive a truck through.
Exactly. All right, good talk.
A truck filled with NIL money.